Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Thank you, Dave Slade, and thank you for listening to this Baseball America Podcast. I'm John Manuel, along with Matt Eddy and J.J. Cooper. Our podcast and all of our Facebook Lives are all sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit the retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona. What better time is it to go to Scottsdale, Arizona right now, check out some spring training, and go to Baseballism store in Scottsdale. Visit baseballism.com or enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off. Actually, you should do both. You should go to baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017. Save 20% off your order and sport some of the shirts that you've been seeing us sport or the hats that you've seen us on our Facebook Lives, guys.
You know, John, I think I'll take you up on that. I think I will go to Scottsdale and
that's
and check
cool.
That out.
I think we're both jealous of you for that. So so we're really here to talk about the anticipation of the Major League season, taking a break from our World Baseball Classic fever. The fever's broken a bit because the Asian series are all done. But it started play in Miami yesterday and in Jalisco, Mexico. Matt, did you watch Jalisco at all? Jalisco's ballpark is flame emoji. I love that ballpark on TV anyway.
I did not. You outed me.
It looks awesome. You don't have the fever? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'll watch the U.S. games.
There you go. That works. You got to watch the DR games.
I was going to say, the DR, like you got the magic of the plantain is a really awesome.
It is hard to get up. It's hard to get up for some of the Dominican pitchers. I will say that. Like Fernando Abad. Fernando Rondi, it's awesome. So that's not what I'm looking for, but that's one of the beauties of the Classic. But we're not here to talk about the Classic. We're really here to talk about Tim Tebow and our anticipation of the Major League season for 2017. See, that's the thing that kills me about the Classic. Really? Spring training is so sacrosanct that it can't be broken up for the World Baseball stinking Classic? We got to give Tim Tebow a bats so you can not break up the sanctity of the spring training? That's why spring training, that's why the arguments against the Classic kill me. They kill me, Jerry.
A strong contender for rant of the day.
Well, we've got a long podcast to go.
I consider that like that's no better than a 50 grade rant.
Oh, me. That was plus. You guys didn't see that one coming. That was a plus rant if I could grade it on my own curve. But we just put our Major League Preview issue to bed. We've got some interesting stuff in the Major League Preview. As always, our top 20 rookies. We have a kind of an in-depth story on the second baseman and the change in the profile at second base and how that's evolved. Second base was, again, ridiculous last season. Two batting champions, our top prospect, our minor league player of the year, highest ranked second baseman of all time. You can read all that in the next issue of Baseball America. But we also have our predictions, guys. We want to dive into the Baseball America crystal ball. Matt, which category did you want to start off with? Because I think we have a lot of ways to go with this. I guess one of the things that always, when you do a preview, you're always kind of looking at bounce back. Is one of the categories that's always in a preview issue. We have bounce back player, bounce back team candidates. Let's start with bounce back player. Bounce back player is kind of fun because for me, it's a different definition for every person. Like, is it a guy who had a decent year, but you expect to be a superstar? Like a Justin Upton wound up having a decent year last year by the numbers. He had a strong finish for Detroit. He's certainly a bounce back candidate. Then there's other bounce backs for other people are just, oh, guy who was hurt and missed the whole year, if he bounces back. There's no defined bounce back or comeback player of the win of the year. Who's your bounce back candidate in our crystal ball in 2017?
I went with Andrew McCutchen of the Pirates. I think getting
a compelling candidate.
Getting out of center field and getting that playing shallow, I think, got in his head last year. I think him, without the defensive demands and without the mandate to play more shallow, I think will help him this year.
You know, for me, JJ, he's also an interesting candidate because he is playing in the Classic, and there's people who think that's a bad thing. I think it will be a good thing for him because I don't know how many players have a bigger chip on their shoulder than Andrew McCutchen coming into the season, where you're the talk the whole offseason about whether they're going to trade you or not. Yep. Then you get changed positions. He's gone from face of the franchise of the Pirates to, some people seem to think last year, he was the problem with the franchise.
And the funny thing about it is that we're talking about all this, and he could bounce back. But also, he would be a good candidate for a guy most likely to be traded because Austin Meadows is not far away. Austin Meadows is one of the best prospects in all of baseball. And you could see, like, Austin Meadows replacing Andrew McCutchen, where you could make the argument that that could allow the Pirates to trade McCutchen and not miss a beat.
You could have made the argument that their best way to contend this year could have been trading McCutchen for other pieces to help the rest of their roster and inserting Meadows in left or in right and moving forward. That could have been the argument. I don't remember reading specific trade, what a trade for McCutchen would have looked like last year. But they would have been selling low on Andrew McCutchen. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, that's why it made sense for them not to trade him. He's got to be better than what he was last year, doesn't he? Or do you think Or do you think those days are past him, JJ? Is there a dead cap bounce in his future?
I don't think he's to the dead cap bounce stage yet. I do think that it's something where it comes back to what do you expect out of him. He's not going to be an MVP-type player again, but he can still be a very productive player. He had a bad year last year. That doesn't mean his career's over. I just don't think that he's ever going to be again what he was when he was 26, 27. That's fine.
It wasn't a horrible year, but the defensive metrics killed him, Matt, for sure.
Yeah.
Who was your pick, JJ, for bounce-back player?
I said Bryce Harper, and I said with the understanding, it wasn't that Bryce Harper was horrible last year. Like, to me, like when we talk bounce-back candidates, Jason Hayward is
that was my answer.
Epitome of bounce-back candidate in that you could not be worse offensively than Jason Hayward was last year.
That's almost. But the thing is, like, even though he was obvious, I think somebody had to write Jason Hayward. I wanted to make sure we wrote him in the magazine.
And he had spring training so far has been encouraging. It's spring training, but he doesn't look like he's hitting with a rolled-up newspaper right now, which is an improvement over what he looked like at the end of last season.
I'm trying to think of other free agents who flopped that badly in the history of baseball. And I might pose it to Twitter and see if any of our followers help me out with this.
Free agent flops.
Because a guy who flopped that horribly and at the same time won the World Series, I can't think of anybody underperforming with a contract like that.
Bobby Bonilla?
Not close, I don't think. No. Not close. But that, you know, plus, I mean, still getting paid. You want to go? I mean,
I'll show you the Bronx.
He goes every year on June 1st.
Denny Nagel? I mean, like the Rockies pitchers in like
2001, I think it was.
I mean, a position player to me would be pitchers, the perfect parallel for this. If you could find somebody.
Right, pitchers is easier to see a guy just falling apart. You get hurt, you know, there's different things. But when I think of a guy's having, because the thing with Hayward obviously is they are tied to Hayward for many years to come. This is
seven more years.
But he can opt out though.
That is one of the best laughs ever. I mean, that's really.
But my thing with Bryce Harper is I just think that Bryce Harper wasn't healthy last year for the majority of the season. We'll find out. The reality is I think that this is a very important season for Bryce Harper that way.
Right.
In that we have seen one season so far where Bryce Harper was everything that we expect Bryce Harper to be.
And before that, it was an ascent. It wasn't like steadily steep, it was a little up and down, but it still was generally an ascent toward that point. He took a big leap, then he kind of fell back to old Bryce Harper days last year. I know there were a lot of injuries. It was an oblique strain that kind of it was a muscle injury that really dogged him all year. I believe it was in his shoulder, actually.
But so what I kind of expect with that is that a healthier Bryce Harper, who's always going to have some injury problems, he plays in a way that is going to cause some injury issues.
Right.
And he's that's just part of the Bryce Harper experience. But I do think that you could see much more the Bryce Harper, which, let's be honest, we're getting to the point now, he needs to have if he's going to sign the $400+ million deal down the road,
right,
he needs to have another Bryce Harper as the greatest player in the National League.
For what it's worth, Denny Nagel's, this is just ERA plus on baseballreference.com. So for what it's worth, 1999, Denny Nagel had a 109 ERA plus. 2000, Denny Nagel, 106 ERA plus. Those are the years that he had going into free agency. His first year with the Rockies, 99 ERA plus.
Okay, so
his second full year, 91. But the ERAs were 538 and 526. So maybe in a less sophisticated age, a less elegant age, as Obi-Wan would say. If he were on baseball tonight, he would criticize him less stringently.
Just to highlight a few other guys. Yeah. Justin Upton, I think that's a good pick.
Because he was really good for like a month and a half, but for the other 4 months, he was awful.
Mike Moustakas, though, it's injury-related why he wasn't effective last year.
Moustakas and Matt Harvey were two injury-related choices that our staff made. Who made those choices? Give those credit where it's due.
Ben Badler had Mike Moustakas. Josh Norris had Harvey.
Those are two interesting injury-related ones, because to me, Matt Harvey, like, a little bit more attention in New York than in Kansas City. We'll all notice if Moustakas struggles in Kansas City, but there are other factors going on with the Royals. But Matt Harvey, when you put yourself out there as the face of the franchise and you put yourself on the cover of Sports Illustrated with that kind of access he allowed and everything on your social media is sponsored, basically, you kind of bring some attention to yourself. And then to flop as badly as he did, Flopperman, as Mark Derowitz used to say about Jesse Foppert. Matt Harvey was bad last year before he got hurt. So he's coming back off thoracic outlet syndrome. And he is also kind of like some of the other players we talked about earlier, McCutchen and Harper. Free agency is not that far away. Mm-hmm. If Matt Harvey wants to hit that giant jackpot, he better be good in 2017. It would also behoove the Mets if Matt Harvey were good.
Although the thing about it is that what stands out for me is that the Mets, again, talk about being pretty well positioned. If I could see a scenario where Matt Harvey's okay and they're like, yeah, we're fine. Like,
he doesn't need to be their number one guy, right?
If they reach Syndergaard, pretty good.
If they reach, yeah. If their other four starters reach their potential, he could be their fifth. It would be fine.
Behind Gesellman.
Correct.
Upset City. I don't think he's behind Gesellman. But he should have ranked Gesellman higher
But performance-wise, that could be the case.
Yeah, that he's an interesting watch. JJ, I mean, how important to what the Royals do is Mike Moustakas this year? I mean, they're a whole team of these guys with impending free agency. I mean, it's basically their whole roster.
It is. I'll go on a tangent after we talk about Moustakas. If Moustakas, I mean, he comes into the season, they need him. They need all these guys to be in the first half of the season, not just overall. They need all these guys. If these guys want to be playing together in August, they need to come out and all play well.
Yeah.
And with the tragedy of the death of Yordano Ventura, I mean, it's fair to ask, is that still going to be enough? This bullpen is not going to be what we've thought of with Royals bullpens. It's now Kelvin. It was the three-headed monster, right, or the four-headed monster. It's now Kelvin Herrera. Right. And putting some guys around him, but that's not the same thing in by any way.
It can still be good, but it isn't like it's the defining characteristic of the roster.
Right.
They weren't very good last year as a bullpen.
No. Which is an understandable.
I think they were good, but then Joaquin Soria was awful.
Joaquin Soria is awful, and Wade Davis showed some wear and tear that's understandable after being a robotic.
Pitching 7 months for 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
That's the one advantage they have is they're a little more rested this year.
They got a break. That's right.
They got a break. But the interesting thing with that, when we talk about impending free agency, okay, Moustakas has a very high variable on what he's going to be in free agency, because it's been, at his best, he's been really good. And then there's been a lot of stretches where he's not been so good. But then you go across the diamond, you go to Eric Hosmer. And, you know, Eric Hosmer is going to be in the middle of the lineup, it looks like, again, you know.
He's in the middle of the USA lineup. For Team USA. Which doesn't probably need to be.
Right, but at the same time, as much as the highlights of Eric Hosmer, which seem to be playoff-related, Eric Hosmer has... is he like a guy who breaks the bank in free agency as a first baseman who hasn't really hit that much?
We asked the same questions of Hayward.
Yeah.
He's kind of a similar guy, except for the fact that, you know, he came into it with a World Series championship. You know, Hayward did not. For me, the thing is, there's so much money in the game. Everything is oriented toward players like Eric Hosmer getting giant paychecks. He's not replacement level. Mm-hmm. He's better than that. I don't know that he's in the middle. Maybe he is in the middle. But he's better than replacement level. He's going to get paid. And he's also, his value does not come from power alone. Mm-hmm. He is, theoretically, a more well-rounded player. A base runner, athlete, defender.
And I want to see, it will be interesting to see, if he does leave, he also is a guy who may get a boost by going somewhere that's not as pitcher-friendly as
Kaufman. A park that favors left-handed power would be huge for him.
So I think this sets up the Royals as a bounce-back candidate as a team, guys. I think they could have a bounce-back season. I think it's a lot harder without Yordano Ventura than it was before that. But they do have an ace in Danny Duffy, who really was fantastic last year in the second half. I don't know that, I'm not sure how confident I am in the rest of the Royals pitching staff. Matt, were they any of our team? I don't think they were anybody's picks for bounce back.
They received zero votes.
What a shock.
But we could talk.
I'm shocked by some of these.
This is, when we talk about biggest surprise team of 2017. John, where did you go with this one?
I went Twins. Part of it is my latent Twins fandom of just having done their prospect list for so long. I would like to see Byron Buxton and Jose Berrios and Max Kepler and these guys do well. Miguel Sano.
Not Sano, okay.
I'd like to see that. No, I'd like to see that team do well. A full year of a healthy Sano not trying to play third base or right field would be outstanding. So Eddie Rosario, I want to see those guys do well. But part of it is just that I thought that the 83 wins in 2015 were fluky. I really thought the 59 wins last year, they earned it, but I don't think they're that bad either. So to me, they're just a natural bounce back candidate to regress to the mean of those 2 years, which would be around 70 to 75 wins. I guess the mean would be around 70, but I think their young talent getting better would be a little bit of improvement. So I'm looking for them to win between 75 and 80 games. I'm not looking for them as a playoff team, but I am looking for them to bounce back significantly from last year.
In terms of run prevention, which pitchers do you expect to key this resurgence to 70 wins?
Well, Berrios has to be part of it. I would hope Hector Santiago is part of that. I hope that just getting rid of Ricky Nolasco, who was a disaster in Minnesota, is part of that. I'm hoping Trevor May, I guess he's just... I don't know, is he still DJ Beef? Does he still have that alter ego?
DJ Hey Beef.
On Twitter. Yeah, I think Trevor May's part of that. But I think really, to me, Berrios is part of that. And getting something out of Kyle, I was about to call him Kyle Glazer, Kyle Gibson. Something out of Kyle Gibson. There has to be 1 year where Kyle Gibson is a league average pitcher. I just think he's too good to be this bad all the time. So those are my answers.
Okay.
But that's not a convincing answer.
And top 100 prospect Steven Gonsalves as well in the second half. Maybe.
I would like for them. I do think that if they can piece it together in the rotation, they have a lot of homegrown arms that can help their bullpen, whether it's Jake Reed or if Nick Birdie's ever healthy or Tyler Jay. I do think that's what they've drafted for so long. It'd be nice if they were ever in it. I think some of those young bullpen arms could really help.
JJ, biggest surprise.
I mean, I do think the Twins. Like, I like that, John, from the standpoint of that they are. They were just so bad last year.
They can't be that
bad. They can't be that bad.
There's too much talent there for them to be that bad.
The frightening thing is they were so bad that they could be significantly better and still be really bad.
That's what I'm saying. They could win 15 more games and be 74 and 88. And that is awful for most teams. But it's a lot better than going 59 and 103.
I know that me and you disagree on this. I think the Pirates have... The Pirates are going to fall apart. Like, last year was a big step back for them at the first really poor season they've had.
They won 19 fewer games. Right. From 98 to 79.
Right.
That's bad. It's bad, Jerry.
I think that they actually still could contend for a wild card spot this year. I think that last year what happened with them is their pitching staff was completely unsettled. Maybe they won't. Maybe Jim Benedict was that important, and then him going to the Marlins. But I look at them and say they worked in so many young pitchers last year. I expect some of those guys this year to be ready to actually just take the job and be solid. That's where I think their run prevention gets better.
Well, give name names.
Okay. Well, Tyone, I think a full season Tyone. I think that you're talking about. I think Glasnow gives them something this year at some point. I think it's still going to be somewhat erratic.
He's a volatile player. He ranked pretty high in our top 20 rookies. We'll have a whole separate podcast for that. But we ranked him higher, way higher in the top 20 rookies than we did in the top 100 prospects among pitchers. So we kind of split the difference a little bit there.
But opportunity is a big thing. And there is opportunity there for him. Yeah. Ivan Nova being there, as crazy as that sounds, is I do think important. Garrett Cole... should be better than... They need Garrett Cole to be the A's.
Right.
He won an ace last year.
I'll tell you what kills me about the Pirates and why I'm not as optimistic is Chad Kuhl, Tyone, Ivan Nova. These are pitch-to-contact guys. Their defense does not look good. Josh Harrison is a fine second baseman, but it's not like he's some gold glover. Josh Bell's a brute... He's trouble at first base. He's not going to help them. Shortstop, Jordy Mercer's a solid shortstop, but they also don't play him all the time. Sometimes they're going to play Harrison there. Sometimes they're going to play Gong there. Sometimes they're going to play Frazier there. Third base, Gong, Freeze.
But that tells you a lot that they have so many revolving doors shortstop. It tells you the number one guy is not a great defender.
That's what I'm saying. So, and they don't have a number one guy who's locked in at any of those other spots. I don't think that's a great combination. For me, that's a team that I would have liked to have seen them invest in one of those positions in a top shelf defender. They don't have that.
Trade Andrew McCutchen for Zach Cozart. Problem solved.
and his orchestra, I hope. Straight up, I hope that's not what you're going for. But yeah, they need an upgrade at all those positions defensively. So I don't like the mix. That's why I'm not on the Pirates. If they're going to invest so much in the ground ball philosophy, match those up.
We'll get into the Pirates again and disappointing. But for surprise team, I picked the Braves. I think a full season of Dansby Swanson. I think Ozzie Albies will be up in May or June. I think teaming those guys, having that middle infield reliability in those two guys at the top of the order, and Bartolo Colon, right. R.A. Dickey in the rotation. I think Mike Foltynewicz is probably going to take another step forward.
They were a perfectly cromulent team in the second half last year.
Exactly.
They were, what, 500 under Brian Snicker?
Some kind of cheating. If you took the second half Braves last year, they were respectable.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just put this out there. I don't know if this ever made it into a podcast last year, but we bet-boarded over who was further along in their rebuilding plan as the Phillies or the Braves. I took the Phillies and you took the Braves, and you were right. So
no, I took the Phillies last year.
Oh, you took the Phillies last
year?
Yeah,
you were right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was giving you the credit.
Through 100 games, the Phillies were better, but then all the pitchers hit a wall or went on the disabled list, and that was the end of that.
Brian Snicker, if you had known that Snit was in charge of the Braves, that was the obstacle for you, was Freddie Gonzalez.
I underestimated, well,
Matt Kemp.
Dansby Swanson.
Well, the Braves did change their whole team when they went out and got a couple of veteran guys and decided, wait a minute, let's stop giving AJ all these at-bats. He's AJ.
They did that, but at the same time, and they also got a boost of, like, the energy for a team like that. Like, the Phillies at the end of the year just looked gassed.
They were done. They were toast.
And whereas the
Braves...
It
was a bad team in September.
It was awful.
Very, very bad.
Whereas the Braves looked like a team that was not gassed.
No.
And credit does go, I think, to, you know, front office Brian Snicker for... But they also... Most of the guys they were playing in September weren't playing for them in April. So they weren't gassed, partly because it's like,
playing well.
This is new.
Yeah,
and the guys who were their older guys, who were the first half guys, like the Eric Ibar, AJ Pierzynski combo up the middle, that's a great team in 2009. But in 2016, that didn't quite work out. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, nobody picked the Rockies, which was my second choice here.
But they did come up a disappointing offseason, did they not?
Well,
those things.
I think both things can be true.
And that's the thing. I think you're right about that. I think they had, and I think we talked about this in their podcast, JJ. I've got Seinfeld on the brain. I guess I've been just hanging
Welcome
out.
Welcome to the Baseball America Seinfeld
podcast. I've been on Kenny Rogers Roasters, and it's freaking me out. We did talk about, in the Rockies podcast, JJ, about how their offseason was so weird. Actually, one thing I forgot to do in the podcast, Twitter is a wonderful thing. Because I mentioned on Twitter, hey, who had such a bad first free agent season like Jason Hayward? And here are the responses. I have 28 responses
nice.
In my Twitter. So Sean Figgins, Melvin Upton, Bobby Bowe, BJ Upton, so that's Melvin. Another Sean Figgins vote. Adam Dunn, 2011, takes the cake for me. Carl Crawford is prominent in my mentions.
I think
Carl Crawford almost as bad as Jason Hayward. I don't think his first
BJ
season
Upton
was as bad.
In there too.
Mo Vaughn with the Mets, that was epically bad.
It wasn't a free agent deal; it was a trade.
Oh, that was a trade.
With the Angels.
Him with the Angels.
Yes.
He also was one of those guys who, like, it was Jafet Amadorish in his
in his
look.
In his first week with the Angels, he fell down the dugout steps.
But a lot of votes for BJ Upton and Adam Dunn. Somebody voted for Ryan Howard, but he didn't leave. But that was an
Carlos
awful.
Beltran with the Mets had a bad 2005, but then rebounded.
But 2006 was a fantastic season for him. But Carl Crawford and then Jason Bay, our old friend Matt Myers, chimes in. So a lot of Mets fans chiming in here with first year. Carlos Lee kinda. I think his first year was actually okay with the Astros. First couple of years. Julio Lugo with the Red Sox. That was a bad one. Josh Hamilton from our friend Sungmin Kim, just back from Korea, the World Baseball Classic. He votes Josh Hamilton in the Angels. That's one of the all-time bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
Milton Bradley with the Cubs. And then Pablo Sandoval got a lot of votes as well.
Josh Hamilton's got to be pretty high up there because
yes.
they basically were willing to trade him away for, in essence, nothing and pay the contract just to get him gone.
Yeah, pretty much.
That was Brock Osweiler to the Browns this week, where they
yes.
talked about, hey, we're really excited about the second round pick that we got.
You can tell
trade.
Paul DePodesta was paying yeah. attention.
It has a baseball reference to it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
The Rockies, I think the biggest surprise. I think for them, the wealth of homegrown or young talent they have coming up this year, I think it makes a big difference. Will they contend with the Giants and Dodgers? Probably not for 6 months, but maybe for three.
it's difficult to see them just because the Dodgers and Giants have so many different ways to win. Where you see that the Rockies, kind of their path has to be, okay, Story has to stay healthy the whole year. Cargo has to stay healthy the whole year and motivated. They have to mash, and they need all these young pitchers to continue to navigate.
With two young catchers behind the plate.
So what you're saying, you're not on the Tony Walters, Tom Murphy platoon bandwagon? That's like my favorite.
They're good. I am on that bandwagon.
They're good, but to play into October, I don't think they're that good.
Sage old veteran Chad Bettis and Tyler Chatwood are the two grizzled vets on that rotation and battery. You'd be like, really, it is surprising. I am curious by some of the moves that the Rockies front office has made. The Desmond trades, the signing has been picked over. Yeah. Mike Dunn and Greg Holland, that's interesting, They paid a lot of money, but I guess they have the money to spend again. The thing that all these things come in threes. The weirdest move for me was trading Eddie Butler to the Cubs when he still had an option left. That part I didn't get. I mean, I understand giving up on Eddie Butler. I'm not criticizing that. From their standpoint, they know the player. But it seems like they DFA'd him, mm-hmm. and he had an option left. That seems strange.
That suggests off the field stuff to me.
That's what it suggests to me as well. He is a reclamation. He's a bounce back candidate for me. If he turns into a guy with the Cubs, like a poor man's Jake Arrieta, he's not going to be like a number one starter. But if he turns into the guy for the Cubs who in the next 2 years makes a playoff start, that won't surprise me.
Or a rich man's Chris Volstad, another Cubs reclamation project.
Well, let's hope he's better than that. Cubs fan. I think he's better than Chris Volstad.
I'm just saying the Cubs made a lot of speculative plays, and Arrieta and Hendricks really paid off.
Right.
But they also gambled on Butler and Volstad.
There's a lot who didn't turn out.
But the thing about it is,
he could just be Trevor Cahill.
But the great part about that is that if he doesn't turn out, if you make 10 of these moves, and one of them turns out, like they've had two turn out, then you've not just won, it's not even close. Because the downside of getting Eddie Butler and he's not any good is nothing. And the upside of him being, even like you said, even if he became Trevor Cahill, the upside there is we didn't give much up. I mean, that's...
And plus right now the Cubs get to say, he's my Butler. So keeping the theme alive.
Some other...
One I wanted to bring up was, because I think of where you are on this, John, because we know a lot of what we're thinking because we have these things. We talk about these things in the office all the time. It's a great thing about working at Baseball America when our job is hey, let's talk about this today.
Yeah, exactly.
But the Mariners made a lot of moves. The Mariners have had... the Mariners always... Jerry DePoto makes a lot of moves.
But nobody made more moves than the Mariners.
The Mariners
ever.
Yeah.
The Mariners have made a lot of moves. And... you look at it in the in a very competitive AL West where you have, I do feel like when you talk about the regression candidate, obviously everyone's talking about the Rangers as a regression candidate because they were so good in one-run games last year.
They beat their Pythag by a ton.
By a ton. But you still have, you have to say the Rangers are there most every year.
Yes.
The Astros.
It's a culture now in Texas.
The Astros should be a playoff contender at the least. If not more. I've got them in the World Series myself. Like, there's a very competitive, and the Angels, if everyone stays healthy, which never happens with the
Angels. But it's a competitive division.
But if everyone stays healthy, they are a team that could frighten you because, for one, they have the best player in baseball.
They have a 10-win player and his orchestra.
And if they're pitching, again, if everyone stays healthy, which it won't, but if everyone does, they could be okay. Where do you think, where are the Mariners? This is a team that has contended to at least stay in the periphery of a playoff hunt not that long ago.
I agree with Jerry DePoto, his motivation in that, A, their old organization needed to shake up. Mm-hmm. B, you have one of the highest paid players in baseball, and he's not getting younger in Robinson Cano. You have to strike while Cano's still at his peak, and while Nelson Cruz is still taking whatever magic beans he's taking. And I don't mean that in any PED sense. The guy's just defying time. He's just so good. He got a late start to his career. And, mm-hmm. That guy's really amazing. How good he's been so late in his career. But for me, they kind of just spun their wheels a little bit. Some of the later trades have been trades for the sake of trades. I don't know if the Mariners have won every trade. I like Seth Smith. I understand why they traded for Yovani Gallardo. They needed pitching depth. But Seth Smith's better than what they're going to trot out on the corners for me. He was a pretty productive player for them, especially as a platoon. Right.
Yeah.
And they are the American League, and they can DH him and Cruz a little bit. I know they're going to be bad defensively if they do that. They're all in on the outfield defense. Where have I seen that before? Oh, wait, it was in Seattle in the late part of last decade. Jack Zarensic tried that there. I just thought some of their moves were kind of got to the point of moves for the sake of moves. I'm not on their first base platoon of Valencia and Vogelbach. Those guys are DHs too. So, you know, if you're going to trade for Jerod Dyson, you're going to make him an everyday player, play him in center field, not left field. So I understand why they made a lot of deals. I'm not sure they're better for it. I didn't like the trade they made with the Diamondbacks, giving up Taiwan Walker for Gene Segura. I thought they bought very high on Gene Segura. I like Taiwan Walker.
And Mitch Haniger, perhaps.
Yeah. So I didn't love that deal for them either. So we'll see. I could be wrong, but I thought that in total, they kind of spun their wheels. I still think they're the third best team in that division. I do not think the deals they made put them over the top.
I love it. I think you have to concentrate all your wins on this year and next year because you have Cano and Cruz and Felix Hernandez. You know,
Felix is a
you have
huge
three of the best players in the league if they play up to their potential. I think
and three who by 2019, 2020, two of those I would say Cano's still gonna be very but Cruz and Felix both could be very much on downsides.
Yeah, you have a
Felix is on his downside.
You have a bad farm system, so you're not gonna get any help there.
Yes.
And plus I just love the novelty of having somebody try this. I think it's great when front offices execute different plans and different philosophies. So I'm glad somebody's trying this.
He didn't have much to lose. What I like that he did, this is something that happens when you have new front offices come in on bad farm systems. If you're existing, you kind of hold on to some of your prospects because they're proof of what you've done. When you're a new front office, you come in and you say, we don't like this farm system.
Right.
They are willing to trade anyone and everyone almost from that farm system because they're like, we think that the guys we'll get back are better than the guys we're trading away.
Right.
Now, we will find out whether they're right or not, but when you even, like, again, it's not a blockbuster deal in any stretch, but Alex Jackson was a top, you know, was the sixth pick in the draft not that many years ago.
Right.
And they looked at it and said, our evaluation is he's not very good. And could we get Max Posey for him? Okay.
And in fact, he's not as good as Max Posey.
Right. So we're going to do that. That is something that really is kind of, for good or bad, it is the freeing influence of it being a new front office.
Right.
An existing front office never makes that move because it's admitting that they screwed up.
Right.
But a new front office does that. Again, it's a lot of moves you could say that these are, a lot of what they did are peripheral.
It's but like they hit 12 singles instead of one or two home runs.
But
I don't think they had 12. They had like 17 trades. I think some of them they struck out.
You think there's some strikeouts in there?
I mean, Mike Montgomery for Dan Vogelbach's a whiff. I mean, Mike Montgomery in their projected rotation would be their number two or three guy. For me, I mean, that guy's pretty good. He was just starting to blossom in Seattle. And that was a coup for the Cubs. I just don't think if you're going to trade Seth Smith because he's not good enough defensively, and then you're going to go acquire Dan Vogelbach and Danny Valencia as your two first basemen. Those guys are brutal defensively. They're bad. They're going to be, and that's going to be a whole out of position that handles the ball a lot. I think it's a bigger miss to be that. So I think they've improved their outfield defense. Their infield defense to me is worse. I think it's a problem for them going forward. That's one that clued me into like, wait a minute. Just making deals now to make deals, it seemed like. So I've just...
Every league has somebody like that.
It does, absolutely.
See, where I like it more than you is that I do think that a lot of these are peripheral moves, but I think that was, if you go back to 2 years ago and say, what was the Mariners' problem in many ways? As you've said, they have these transcendent guys. I mean,
I'm not saying they shouldn't have shaken things up. I'm just saying I like the idea of shaking it up. But that doesn't mean that they got that much better. I don't think they did.
What I like about it is and we'll see if it works out, but what I like it is that I feel like now every team really wants to have nowadays 8 or 9 starting pitchers when you start the season because you know you're going to have injuries, you know you're going to need them. And I feel now a lot of these guys are low ceiling, but I feel like they have 8 or 9 guys now. I didn't feel like they did a year or two ago. I know you disagree on that.
I don't think it's that different. The guys who are different, they've added outside are Gallardo, but that was for swapping out Walker.
Think of all the home runs that Jared Dyson's going to take off of Dylan Overton's stat
right,
line.
That's right. Dylan Overton, I didn't even think he was even part of this conversation.
Dylan Overton, Mac Posey, but like the Andrew Moore from inside the organization.
Right. So I don't think Max Posey's getting in the big leagues this year.
Do we want?
I don't.
I think we should move on.
Yes, yeah. We should move
Let's
on.
Let's do the best or worst offseason. Do you want to go half full or half empty first?
Let's go half empty. But I do think people I think people banged on the Blue Jays. A couple people banged on the Blue Jays, correct?
Yeah.
And I think that there's some – when I read it, I thought the critique was accurate. This was a market where the power market was so defined as anybody want – I hit home runs. We'll hit home runs for food. But they acted very early and – they're pretty weak in the outfield corners, Matt, and they signed Kendrys Morales for $11 million a year. Kendrys Morales and his agents made the right move. They made the right call. Get ahead of this market. Let's sign up now before people figure this out. So I still think the Blue Jays are contenders in the American Leagues, but again, American League East. But again, they got to thread that needle, and I don't love their outfield and their power right now.
I mean, to me, Marcus Stroman is the reason why I'm optimistic about the Blue Jays. I think he's a huge breakout candidate.
Good call.
Great
call.
Him and Aaron Sanchez. I think that's a legit one too. In terms of most disappointing, the Blue Jays came up. I went with the Pirates. Here's where we can expand on this.
Yeah.
Because to me, they were pretty rudderless. They could have traded McCutchen to improve their 2017 team, but at the same time, they made no actual... They signed Daniel Hudson and some minor league free agent types.
They are a team that, for right or wrong, I do feel like they're very much a team that they're all about expanding the window of competitiveness much more than ever going all in on a year.
Right.
Pirates fans, I can understand Pirates fans being very upset with that because the reality is it has not paid off with one real successful playoff run yet. They've been around it a lot, which, let's be honest, if you're a Pirates fan for the 20 years before that, sounds really good.
Yeah.
But
not good enough.
But
right now.
There, it is something where it's every year it's like, okay, how do we expand this for another few years instead of it ever being, no, this is the year we're pointing to. And we'll see how that works out. But I agree with you. That they didn't. No, they're very much. They didn't do anything to make this year a big year. They did everything to kind of like, even the moves like, hey, we're going to try to get out from under this contract with Liriano. Right. It's all about, can we expand it longer? Can we just keep it going?
They're two best players. However you slice it, two of their three most talented players are on the way out. McCutchen and Gerrit Cole are not long-term Pittsburgh Pirates. That is the reality. So whether they win, so what they've tried to do, instead of like, we're going to win, it's like we just argued with the Mariners. The Mariners are like, we're going to win while we have Cruz, mm-hmm. Felix, and Cano. The Pirates have taken the opposite tack, which is, we're going to try to stretch this out. We're not going to go all in while we have McCutchen and Cole under contract. Those guys are going to be gone, one way or the other, from Pittsburgh. They are not long-term Pirates. So it's weird that, to me, it's like a little incongruous that you would say, you're agreeing with what the Pirates are doing and with what the Mariners are doing because they're in kind of a similar situation.
No, but I see it. But the thing to me is that with the Mariners, when you talk about that, those moves are all peripheral moves that have done. They've not traded. Mike Montgomery may be the only one.
Why shouldn't the Pirates have made the similar peripheral moves? They did not make any peripheral moves. That's Matt's whole point.
They think the peripheral moves are coming from a still very good farm system.
That is the difference.
With a lot of major league ready.
They have a good farm system with major league ready guys, whereas the Mariners had a terrible farm system. And so you take different approaches. They broke out again last year. Tyone, Glasnow, Cool, Brault, four rookie starting pitchers. And again, when you look at them now, they're still most of those guys are going to be relied on this year. Josh Bell came up last year. I agree with you. He is brutal defensively at first, but he can hit. And they're like, okay, you said about McCutchen and Cole. The thing about it is that you look at them now and say, if this Pirates team's going to be successful, it's going to be more about Polanco and Marte being the stars of 2016, 17, 18, 19, and beyond. They have that possibility.
I don't think they have the upside that McCutchen has shown. I don't think those guys' best will be as good as Kutch's best was.
A polarizing team, the Pirates.
Yeah, they are. For me, I'm more on your side. I think they're, I think you have to strike a little bit more with the iron top like that.
And
you
don't
have to use prospects to win in the big leagues by calling them up. They could have packaged some of those prospects. I mean, Chris Sale was out there. and he's very cost controllable. Why would they not get in on Chris Sale? How much different would you view the Pirates if they traded for Chris Sale instead of the Red Sox trading for Chris Sale?
With Austin Meadows in the corner.
Yeah, I mean, if you want big league ready prospects.
But they wouldn't have Austin Meadows. They would, if you're going to do a package to get Chris Sale for the Pirates.
No, Austin Meadows would be playing for the Pirates.
No, I'm saying he'd be part of the trade.
I'm saying, well.
No, McCutcheon for sale.
I was thinking it was more the
White
prospects.
Sox would, the White Sox wouldn't do McCutcheon.
Yeah, I was thinking it would be more Pirates prospects for Chris Sale or for any of those kind of pitchers or other team stars that were available. I don't see why they wouldn't have been. You can be aggressive when you have a farm system that's like theirs, that's deep like theirs. I understand why they're depending on their guys, but last year you said the same thing for the Astros. It did not work out. They still have a great farm system, but they didn't make moves. And that wasn't the only reason they didn't make it to the postseason, but their giant sucking hole at first base was a big reason.
Oh, absolutely.
And maybe if they picked up James Loney instead of playing the first baseman that they did play, that might have been the difference for them. Something as simple as a perfectly capable big league first baseman. So that I feel like the Pirates are kind of repeating the mistake that the Astros made.
I'm a dispassionate guy in many ways, and it doesn't always work out. But and I agree that I follow what you're saying. To me, if you have no farm system, I don't mind you trading the Angels from a few years ago when they made that one right. Place where it's like whatever you want. Okay,
or the Marlins, as you very well argued, I think Matt, like if you have no prospects, if your prospects are garbage, trade them for anything you can get. I totally agree. Their prospects are garbage. They could have gotten stars for it.
Mm-hmm. And your disappointing team, John?
I don't even remember, but I said the Tigers. I just feel like they're caught in between. I understand their mitigating circumstances. Obviously, that's what I wrote about was the loss of Mike Ilitch. I love their patch on their uniforms, the Mr. Eye patch for Mike Ilitch. The more you read about Mike Ilitch, and which I've read about him more since he died than I ever had before. Before he was almost like a caricature of a Little Caesars pizza owner and rich guy who owned two teams. But it seems like he was a decent guy who was a benevolent and good owner. I also like the fact of an owner who poured the money he had into trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
That motivation is gone in Detroit. So I just feel like they're caught in between a little bit. It feels like if Ilitch had been healthy and fully engaged, they would have made one more push this offseason. Because they were close last year to winning that division or making the postseason. They were mm-hmm. into the last weekend for a wild card spot.
When the Braves whooped them.
That's right. But when you have a bounce back season like they got out of Justin Verlander, when you still have the best hitter on the planet for me and Miguel Cabrera, not the best player, but the best pure hitter, and you still have other key pieces, I thought they needed to add to that. And they really had a very inert offseason.
Yeah.
So that's why they were my choice.
No, I agree with them. I agree with that I don't see them contending, but at the same time they haven't done a teardown. The one I picked for the kind of the same way is that's worse, but
yeah,
I don't know where the A's are right now. Like, and I say that from the standpoint of
they're in Oakland, but that's not a good place to be.
But this team has not been good.
Yeah.
I mean, they haven't been in the middle. They've been just above the dregs for the last couple of years. Really.
They were pretty dregsy last year.
They made the playoffs in 2014.
14, yeah. No, but I'm saying the last 2 years this is a team.
Since they started to try to be bad,
but they haven't.
They've been bad, but they haven't been the worst.
But the thing about it is, and I know I do like the trade. I do like that what they did with Rich Hill last year was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I think that was brilliant. That worked out. That will pay off for them for years to come. But I look at this. I look at them and say, this is the team who is trying. I kind of feel like they're trying to win 80.
And yeah, they've succeeded in winning 68 and 69 the last 2 years. But what's amazing to me is that they don't seem to have a plan. They didn't recognize what they had in 2014. They totally misread their own big league roster. They have been horrible offensively since they made they traded Cespedes. In 2014, I wrote this in the handbook. In 2014, they were first in the league in scoring before they traded Cespedes. They wound up that year second or third in the American League. Then they were ninth in 2015, and they were dead last year. There's also this ridiculous revisionist history going on the interwebs, especially on Twitter, when Brett Lawrie was released, and it's like, well, that is another indictment of the trade the A's made, the Donaldson trade. But there's this revision of like, hey, Kendall Graveman's been pretty good. There's still a chance for Sean Nolan and Franklin Barreto's in the top 100. Big effing deal. You traded Josh Donaldson with 4 years of control. Look at the deals that were made this offseason for players with control. The A's misread their own roster, and they made one of the worst trades ever. Just a joke. That's a 60 grade rant.
That's a number. Maybe more. That's a 70. That's why I called the last one a 50, because that was a 70.
It's just such BS.
The real fireworks are coming next.
Yeah. Why are people going out of their way to defend the A's on this? I just don't get it. What is this spell they have over people?
There's no defense to the Josh Donaldson trade. There's none.
Also, Addison Russell, trading Addison Russell with the Cubs. What was that trade I was
for? Addison Russell for Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hayes.
The Samardzija trade.
And Billy McKinney.
Oh, my God. I mean, like, how do you give up Addison Russell? Who is this guy? I mean, only Billy Beane could make trades like that and keep his job. Who else keeps their job?
That'd be like revision.
Like the aftershock.
But Andrew Miller has turned out to be really good. So hey, that Miguel Cabrera trade was good.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's like. It's just so. You have to know your own talent to win.
The thing about it is when they traded Donaldson at the time,
everybody was like, "What the hell?"
And that's what I'm saying though is when I look at this team right now, who is. Like, what is the scenario that you map out with the A's right now that gets them to competitive? And by competitive, I mean wild card contention.
Has to come from pitching, because they have loaded up on some pitching. They do have some interesting pitching, whether it's Jarrell Cotton or Sean Manaea, Daniel Mengen. They have
hoping
a lot of pieces.
Hoping that Sonny Gray comes back from.
And that's the big problem is that they're kind of building around that, and that's a very volatile commodity. And Sonny Gray's already been shut down for the rest of spring training, so.
That hurts his trade value,
and that hurts their big league team. Right. So they're the one team in that division that they're not competitive this year.
But you look at it and you look at that lineup and you say, okay, again, a team that had Josh Donaldson. Nowadays, Stephen Vogt? Is that
Marcus Semien?
Is that
Chris Davis and his 290 on base? I mean, seriously. And their big offseason move was Rajay Davis? Well, what's going on here?
Or Trevor Plouffe.
Yeah, I mean, like, seriously, what is going on here?
But again, like, the argument you can make on that is... But what I'm saying is that better? Is that better than basically, instead of going out and getting Rajah Davis and Trevor Plouffe, which admittedly are not big ticket acquisitions.
Correct.
But
those are the kind of moves the Pirates should be making.
But is that better than being what the Phillies or the Braves or the Astros or the Cubs? Like, aren't you better just saying, you know what? Instead of, we know that Trevor Plouffe will not be part of the next. Your hope when you do that is you're holding on to Trevor Plouffe for 2 months,
yeah,
and you're hoping that there's enough there that. But is Trevor Plouffe going to have trade value?
The tip off to the rip off is the fact that they don't really have a plan. That they're in this middle ground. Is that they gave up Dylan Overton. If they really tried to tank, they'd have kept Dylan Overton with his 12 home runs and 24 innings last year. I mean, epic.
I'd love to see that guy over 150 innings.
I mean, like, it would be a wonderful strat experiment to see what would happen. But, I mean, that's the thing. I agree with you, JJ. They're kind of stuck in the middle. I mean, I do like Raven, Manaea,
by middle.
You're not going to make me defend them, are you?
No, but by middle,
they're stuck
at
the 8th to 12th. They're like at the 8th to 12th pick in the draft range.
I think they could win 75.
Yeah, maybe.
But winning 75 to 80 doesn't. I am. I know that there are fans out there who go, no, you should try every year.
If the Twins are winning 75 games with a big step forward from Berrios and Sano and Buxton, you're excited. But if these guys are doing it with a nice year from Rajah Davis and Trevor Plouffe and Chris Davis with his KHRIS and Marcus Semien.
The K is for strikeout.
Nicely done. I'm just not as excited. So I don't see the A's plan. So, but
okay.
Defend the A's.
No, I don't want to.
how do we wrap up?
Now we're going half full. Best off seasons. We probably should go a little more quickly on this one, but.
Best off season. JJ, I'm going to let you answer first.
JJ and I had the same pick, and I know John disagrees, so.
Who'd you guys pick?
We both picked the Astros.
Oh, no, I don't think they had a terrible offseason.
Oh, to me, the Astros. They did exactly what you said. What they did last year that didn't work out was we are depending on homegrown. We're gonna count on that. We're gonna have a first baseman between AJ Reed and Jonathan Singleton, and that did not work out. We're gonna have an outfield, and their outfield, every single guy in their outfield, some of whom had played very well the year before. You had the Colby Jacks, and you had Carlos Gomez, you know, and every one of those guys took a big step back. And so what they said is this year is. No, we are We're rebuilding the outfield. George Springer, you get to stick around. Everyone else, you're either in a much smaller role or you're gone.
I like what they did position player-wise. What's not to like? Carlos Beltran is a DH with some occasional outfield time. I thought a very big upgrade behind the plate. Brian McCann from a leadership standpoint. No one will have fun in Houston this year, that's for sure.
Love that trade.
Josh Reddick is a free agent signing. That was a smart move, smart pickup. They're incongruous to me, Matt. They don't have a lot of power arms in their rotation in a power era.
No, they don't. But also Nori Aoki.
Yes.
I mean, they clearly went for more contact and left-handed bats, which was a deficiency on last year's team.
So, again, recognizing what you have and addressing it.
But John's point about pitching. The starting rotation could be a problem.
That's my only question.
If McCullers can't stay healthy, if McHugh is not the 2015.
Are you telling me that someone who throws 60% curveballs, and it is the most power curveball of any power curveball, that may be difficult to do over 200 innings?
However, I do expect to see Francis Martes by June.
Martes and Paulino are keys for them, in my opinion, of them achieving
their
goals. Martes
is the top pitching prospect who's healthy in baseball. I think they're going to trade some prospect surplus for a starting pitcher, Jose Quintana, somebody like that.
Yeah.
So I think there is lots of upside in the rotation, despite not being an October-caliber staff right now.
And I do think Joe Musgrove, you know, my Joe Musgrove fandom. I think that I think that he could be, you know, again, when you talk about power arm, he's a guy who could, you know, 93, 94 mile an hour fastball with exquisite command for his age, all that. I do think their bullpen's deep. And the other thing is that they have depth from the standpoint of if they have injuries, you know, like because they went out and acquired guys, like you look at their outfit and you say, okay, let's say that Nori Aoki wakes up and goes, you know what, I'm old. And so he's, well, then you've got Teoscar Hernandez. And
might be hard for him to play without the band behind him, or the fans cheering and the Indiana Jones theme song they were doing for him.
But
it's pretty awesome.
It is.
WBC fever, man. You got to catch it.
It's awesome. See that. Every different Japanese player has his own chant, and they do it every time he comes up.
The thing is, that awesome. The Astros do have a lot of plan Bs, JJ, pretty much at every spot.
Yeah, right. There is not a player on this team. Carlos Correa is great. But if Carlos Correa suffered a season-ending injury tomorrow in the WBC, perish the thought.
Don't say that.
But Alex Bregman slides over. And then you say, okay, so what's our third baseman going to be? Well, you know what? Yulesky Gurriel is going to play third. Okay, wait. Or J.D. Davis. Or
Colin Moran.
Okay,
Tyler White. Gonzalez.
You've got a problem at second. Hey, by the way, Alex Bregman or Yulesky Gurriel can play there. Okay, in the outfield.
I would love to see them play Yulesky Gurriel at 33 at second base. So would the rest of the American League West. That ain't happening, JJ.
Murphy
was 23, not 33. Yeah.
Exactly. You hit on the two guys they can't lose. Altuve and Correa, as good as Bregman is, those guys are different cats.
Right.
And I think Bregman can be a different cat, too. Mm-hmm. That's why I like this team. But if you lose one of those two guys in the middle, they're negatively affected.
If George Springer, you're asking him to be probably your fifth best player in your lineup, because if Brian McCann is who we, you know.
Brian McCann's
not probably bat lower because they only get the left-handed batters up higher.
But that is.
You're asking him to be their third best player. Bregman's awesome. Springer is, too. Springer should be better this year than Bregman. This will be the first year where we see what Bregman does over a full course of a season. I believe in Alex Bregman. I've always been too light on him. But George Springer's pretty stinking good.
But that's one. Again, so I do think. I think that this is a team that. And again, the AL West, for all that it could be very competitive, every other team in the AL West, with probably the exception of the Rangers, who I can't see completely collapsing, but the Angels could easily be a 70-win team. It does not take too many steps to go, uh-oh.
I mean, if Mike Trout gets hurt for the first time in his career, if he misses a month with a knee injury, how many games do the Angels win? 59? 60? Seriously, if he's a 5-win player 1 year and not a 10-win player, how bad are the Angels?
I would say they're 5 wins worse.
All of it, a little bit worse than that. Everything collapses for them. They don't. That's a team that has no plan B. They have one plan.
I still think they
had a good offseason, though, Matt.
Yeah, you picked them for best offseason. Could you care to elaborate?
I think they had a great offseason because they didn't have much to work with. And in the past, their way to try to address things has been $125 million contract for Josh Hamilton. By the way, we did have one last good tweet about first-year contracts. Mark Davis. That's like the all-time.
That is. I was there. I covered Mark Davis and his 7 ERA in the Braves.
Mark Davis got the Cy Young Award for the Padres in 1989 with 44 saves and a 1.85 ERA. And the next year for the big money Royals, he had a 5.11 ERA and six saves.
Sorry, I wasn't there. I shouldn't say I wasn't there for that. I was there for John Schuerholz trying to do a reclamation project with Mark Davis the next year in Atlanta.
The thing is, most of the time in recent years, the Angels have made giant moves, splashy moves, mm-hmm. and they haven't worked out. And this year, you know, they made, I thought, rational moves. You know, Jared Weaver is a guy who gave a lot to that franchise, signed a lower contract, and was a great player for them for a long time. But they were able to part ways with him in a rational and dispassionate manner. They made moves, on the periphery. They didn't give up a lot to get Danny Espinosa. They signed Luis Valbuena, who's a good depth piece for their roster. They didn't blow up what they had.
Traded for Cameron Maben.
Yeah, exactly. Cam Maben for Victor Alcantara. That was a huge
win
for them.
Two huge trades. They improved their run prevention by quite a bit.
So their pitching depth was not easy to improve. It still feels like they actually improved. But, you know, just picking up Jesse Chavez as an extra guy, instead of having to put in Corey Rasmus, who's only a reliever, and stretching him out, Jesse Chavez is that perfect kind of sixth starter kind of guy. So they're still banking on, hey, if Alex Meyer is good, and if Andrew Haney and Nick Tropiano can help us in the second half, and if Garrett Richards stays healthy. There's too many ifs.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that they helped the margin of their roster without really giving up much. I thought it was a smart offseason for them, and it's a good sign for the future for Billy Epler as their GM.
Yeah, I'm also pro-Angels because Epler was pretty much a secret weapon for the Yankees for many years.
Yeah.
And pro-scouting.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Yankees pro-scouting had always been pretty solid. And we'll see. You know, Houston Street talking about dead cap bounce. I don't know if you guys saw this story where basically he had an in-home gym that he built like 4 or 5 years ago. He just stopped using it. He, when his father, James Street, died, he took over the family business in the offseason and just like basically stopped working out. So that didn't work for Houston Street last year. So I think you'll have one more good year out of Houston with the caveat that I'm hopelessly biased for Houston Street despite his politics.
Do you guys want to do some lightning round like MVP Rookie of the Year picks? I think we all picked Andrew Benintendi and Dansby Swanson as our rookies of the year.
And we all picked Benintendi over Swanson for a better year this year. I think we're all in on Andrew Benintendi in the bat. I understand why the Red Sox would hit him third. That makes sense.
In terms of MVP, is that exciting?
It's just so hard to not pick. Yeah. I mean, in this decade, I think you're always going to pick Trout and Harper, aren't you, JJ?
I figure if I do that every year, I'll be... Especially
if you don't pick Harper, pick Bryant if you don't pick Harper.
But if I pick Mike Trout every year, I'll generally be right.
I agree.
It may be boring, but I'll generally do
it. I chose Carlos Correa and Corey Seager. Young shortstops rule the day.
You didn't want to be the same. I don't blame you for that. I think that makes sense. Matt, we should make you do the ad read.
No. I'm all over it.
All right.
I'm all over it. But before we do the Cy Young, you said Corey Kluber in the AL. I said Aaron Sanchez. Matt, you said Chris Sale.
I like the Aaron Sanchez pick. And I'll also say that I've seen people write about Corey Kluber's insane postseason workload. And I wish I'd thought about that more before I picked it. I really picked him more from the, I would like for this guy to win another one because he's so good.
He's awesome,
man.
And even
after the World Series, I still think he's underrated.
And speaking of, you picked Madison Bumgarner to be the NL Cy Young winner.
So did I.
And so did you. I picked Noah Syndergaard. I think, you know, I want to see Noah Syndergaard at some point this year. It's like, okay, now he's throwing a 100-mile-an-hour slider, which would, you know. But
he's a freak.
He is a freak.
He is a freak.
But we do thank you for the download. We thank you for listening to this Baseball America podcast. And our Baseball America podcast are brought to you by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out www.baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona, with more to come. I think I'll be seeing one at the new SunTrust Park before long in Atlanta.
Pretty cool.
Visit baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to not only save 20% off, but also you're supporting the Baseball America podcast. And we thank you for doing that. For John Manuel and Matt Eddy, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody, and we will talk to you again next week.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.